Welcome to the Self-Study Project, a podcast to deepen your practice through reflection with co-hosts Jenna Baird and Stephanie Gibson. Welcome back to another episode of the Self-Study Project. We have a special guest today, and I always love when we have guests because I get to learn about something completely new, something I've either been curious about, something that a tool I'd really like to use, or just kind of exploring other ways of self-study. Today we have Adriana MacGregor of the Soul and Body, what is it again? Space. Soul and Space. I have it written right here and my brain went out of it. Soul and Space Organizer, which I have some questions written about that because I don't think people realize how much those connect. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait to talk about that. But please tell me more about what you do, Adriana. Welcome.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm super excited to be here. And soul and space for me has to do with your inner world being reflected in your outer world. So I don't think many people have the connection of the way we show up, the way we interact with our loved ones, our, you know, any relationship at work really is reflective of what's going on the inside. But with so much coming at us, so much media, so much, you know, informing us throughout our day, I think people don't know how to listen in anymore. They don't even hear themselves when they're talking. Mm-hmm. And what they're perpetuating by way of their words. So soul and space started off as I love to organize. I mean, like my Barbies as a kid were like more organized, their closets hanging in color coordination rather than me playing with them. It was more like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, good. Now you're all where you're supposed to be. You talk amongst yourselves, you know? And, you know, it turned into I worked in jobs like customers, you know, all customer service related, but concierge for hotels where itineraries being built and things being organized, like all of that is my forte. I love it. I love stepping into a situation, assessing it in like 3 seconds and being like, this is what needs to happen. Boom, 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 let's go. Where other people are like, I don't really know. What could I do with this space or what could I do here? And I'm like, oh, just move out of the way and I'll take care of it. So that was the initial. And then as I kept on with being interested in relationships, with how interpersonal skills now seem to be, have gone the way of the dodo bird, for me, it was more important to figure out how to communicate effectively, how to be better in all aspects, better with my friendships, holding boundaries, et cetera. So I could probably wax eloquent for another 3 hours on the topic of like, yeah, investigating how I was showing up and the feedback I was getting. Mm-hmm. How did it relate to me? Because a lot of times we want to just place, I don't want to say blame, but put it outside of us.
Attribute mm-hmm. it somewhere else. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, it started really as soon as it was like, there's more here than just you have some clutter in your space and it's dealing with the emotions you feel about the thing. It could be you've got a garage full of your grandparents' stuff that they passed away and they raised you. And so now you don't want to go through it because you feel like it's bad memories or, well, good memories, but now bad because they're gone. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to get rid of things, or you went through a divorce or a spouse passed away. And now it's this life that you don't have anymore. But what about the life you do have? Right. So people don't understand that the clutter takes from your emotions. Like it's like having a bunch of tabs open on your computer. So your computer is struggling, even though you're not looking at those 15 tabs open, you're only looking at the one, but it's struggling to keep those up. And it's trying to decide, well, where do I place my attention for you to give you the best thing? That's your garage, your hall closet, your den, the office, the room you don't go into anymore, filled with stuff. Is it's keeping a tab open in your brain forever knowing. And then what are you telling yourself about it? you know?
Or what are you doing every day to fill your time so tightly as to avoid the very thing that you know you need to do? Oh, that is so poignant. You know, I have never actually thought about it that way. But, you know, I have a drawer like that, that's for sure. And it's what where it catches the things. And I do know, though, what's in it. I just know, like, oh, yeah, that extra stuff, it's in there. But when it's something that needs to be done, I remember actually my experience with you. It was very much that way. You know, I actually hired Adriana myself. And as part of the work, it was to release the boxes of my parents that I still was not going through. And it was hanging out in this extra room. And it's like, first of all, who buys a house to say, well, we're going to need an extra room just for the things that we know? What if it were to be a guest room with a nice guest bed, or if an organized office or something? And I'll tell you what, I did years of everything else as an avoidance mechanism. And it's amazing how busy you make yourself avoiding things.
Yeah. Well, and how your clutter can protect you from things. You know, you can't, if you keep the room filled with boxes, you can't have guests. And maybe you don't want to be seen in a way, you know, and you don't want people in your personal space because they may judge, they might have opinions about things that you don't want to hear, they might expose you to something. So it is really interesting. People are like, once I explain what I do with people, and give them kind of some anecdotal, like from past experience, they're like, oh, and they start to see themselves. And that's the first part of seeing the self again, right? Seeing the soul behind your space is like very eye-opening and enlightening to my clients.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at your website before this, and you do right out the gate talk about you being a non-judgmental space. And I really thought about that as far as, you know, how does somebody's shame or personal judgment, because, you know, listeners, this is an excellent opportunity for self-study. You know, how often do you realize that your defensive behavior can be rooted and traced back to, in fact, an area of shame? We don't go out the gate being like, well, I'm ashamed to let them in my house. But what we feel is defensive, which can be traced back to shame. So how often do you have to work with somebody on, even before they want you, they want what you do, they see it on social media and they're like, can you do that to my garage? But then it's like, it's the shame, it's the mysterious things that you're going to find. How do you get past that? So, because I know you offer services that are specific to the house, right? Where you just go in, you do house stuff. Well, how often do you, when scheduling house related organization, do you realize that the soul's going to need some permissions first? You know, how does that work?
Well, I like to say you can't separate who I am from what I do. So what you get, whether you think you're hiring me for soul or for space, is both, right? So for me, it starts as soon as I talk to people. The very first thing out of people's mouth usually is, number one, I need you. And number two, but what you're going to think when you see it's really bad. And I'm like, believe me, I have seen some things in my time that it, you know, could be on a TV show, you know, it's like, it's that kind of experience, but I don't judge the person for getting to that point because it's a protection mechanism. So, you know, I don't differentiate a lot of times unless someone is specifically saying, I would like to do hypnotherapy on a thing, then yes, that's when it's we're doing hypnotherapy work. If someone is talking to me about a limiting belief or decision that they have made about their life and what they can or cannot do or achieve or be, then we're doing some neuro-linguistic programming or NLP session type work. When it comes to, you know, I have this space and I need help organizing it, I just haven't been able to face it, it's too much of a task, it's too big of a project, then they get my language. They get me asking interesting questions to them that help them move outside their box of problem. So the problem is I'm disorganized. But it's really a deeper issue, only always. So that's the other part of what my training is.
Okay. So you were saying that you don't always have to do a hypnosis session with someone, but you do encounter their resistance and what they're going to find, that kind of, you know, shame and things like that.
Yeah. And we cover it by just honestly talking to them. I think having someone reframe your shame around something to give you the outlook of the outcome, right? Rather than focusing on the process of and what the initial will be, which seems very scary to have someone see parts of you that are messy, whether that's emotional or that's physical. We get rid of that. We start to focus on what is life going to be like once it's all clear, once there isn't that clutter, and that gets them into a completely different state. So if you're no longer in the emotional state of shame and now you're in excitement or you're in possibility or whatever you want to label it, just the idea, you know, just in talking to clients, I think my favorite thing is when they don't realize how much has just happened in a short discovery call. And I get a text like, I'm really looking forward to this project. And I'm surprised that I'm saying that, you know, and that to me is the best thing ever.
Yes. And so is that using your other skills? Because I understand that you're also trained in neuro-linguistic programming and you're also a coach. And so when you are getting people to look at the outcome, where does that come from? And can people do that for themselves? Are there tools that people can use to where they're starting to be aware of that language once they've worked with you?
Sure. You know, my biggest thing, like I said, is focusing on the end result. You know, I know everyone talks about like, oh, but the journey, it's the journey. I'm like, it is the journey. But if you never get started on the journey, you know, because you can't see the other side of things, then it doesn't matter, right? That journey never begins. So I talk to people about the outcomes. We write it out in a specific way that I did learn in my NLP, I'll shorten that, for neuro-linguistic programming training. And I always want, I want the client to have an understanding of what the end result will be. So we work on that before we even get started on if it is a physical space project, because that's going to keep them motivated to continue. So things like that in your life, if you've got, you know, the outcome of weight loss is what you want. You want to have, you know, a different body. I hate to even say like summer body or whatever. I mean, all your body is your body. It's your home. Love it. Respect it. Take care of it. But you do have, let's say you, yeah, you want to increase your health. You want to get more fit. So we want to be able to see, hear, and feel that end result by way of our words. And so what I help people do is actually put words that are helpful rather than harmful to the outcome that they want, right? We're always so used to, it's like you ask someone, well, what do you want? And they go, well, I can tell you what I don't want. I'm like, it's not the question. I didn't ask you what you don't want, because everyone can tell me what they don't want, because it's what you have. And the problem is you've been focusing so much on what you don't want, you've been creating it. Subconsciously, your mind is going, oh, I don't want, but I don't understand that. I'm creating a picture of the image of don't want. So I don't want to be fat. So I only imagine myself as fat. So my subconscious is like, guess we're fat. Okay, job done.
Yeah.
Path of least resistance.
Right.
So, you know,
because it is still seeing an outcome there. It's just not understanding that it needs to see a different outcome to reach the different outcome.
Right. Exactly. Right. So the net, you know, easiest example too, it's like people, generally people have goals around the way they look and their financial situation, right? So it's one of those two things a lot of times. And they think a fix in either one of those areas is going to be the key to everything, which it might. I'm actually investigating something, we can talk about it later, but what I'm finding is our worth is so tied to our lack of understanding of our actual monetary worth. So interesting. That'll be a tangent, maybe another episode, but but when you say like, oh, I want more money. Well, more is a undefined term. More is 1 cent more than what you have. Is it $100 more than what you have? Is it $1 million more than what you have? And so you go, I want more money. That's what I want. Great. Well, you walk outside and you're taking your dogs out and you find a quarter on the ground. More money. Subconscious
manifested.
We did it, guys. Done.
Yeah.
So it's this learning and understanding that we are creating as we're thinking and speaking and feeling, right? You know, there's, I love the acronym TFAR. Your thoughts are going to inform your feelings, and your feelings are going to create your action, and your actions give you results. So if one part of that, if the result is something you don't want, go backwards and figure out where it's stemming from. And these little things that I help people see, it's like, it's not rocket science, but it maybe it's not being taught in schools. I don't think anyone ever told me, like, use your word is your wand, right? You can create whatever life you want, but we're taught very easily to tend toward the negative and knowing that, but we have trouble defining the positive and the outcome. Because we lack the, we weren't taught, we lack the ability to see that. And we've got limiting beliefs that we've heard from our parents and our teachers and our friends that we've somehow taken on and let it sink in and take it on as belief. And then now we operate from these underlying programs, hence the programming in neuro-linguistic programming.
Right, right. Yeah. And also the negative is what has been enforced. You know, the negative gets the biggest celebration, so to speak, as opposed to celebrating the little things. You know, there are people that I work with too, who don't get celebrated for just a small accomplishment. And now I'm not saying that I actually am a big fan of, like, let's all get gold medals just because we participated. But we need to recognize, hey, I participated and I failed and this is awesome. And now I'm going to do it again. And this time I'm going to have a different outcome or whatever it is, but you participate and you celebrate that you participate. You accomplish something and you celebrate you accomplish something and you get somehow reinforced for that versus just constantly being reinforced for the negative, which is when we might have gotten the most attention from our parents or school, or even when you get noticed by the people around you. I mean, we all kind of even start out as kids when we are really young and we start to explore the gender that we're interested in, you know, by picking and prodding and poking and getting negative reinforcement. So, I mean, it's pretty early.
I mean, it's all very early. You're right. I mean, I believe it's even before we've left the womb, you know, that we're hearing and feeling things that are going to inform us later. And just one thing on, you know, it's like, I agree with you. Yes. People shouldn't get gold medals for, you know, every little thing just because you showed up. I do believe in celebrating the wins, and rather than saying, like, oh, I showed up and I failed, but that's okay, is I want to say I showed up and I got some feedback on how to do it better, right? There's no failure, only feedback. Yeah.
And I love it.
Because the word failure has so much tied to it. I mean, it's interesting. Words have meaning placed on it for millennia. Like, it's just, we know what a word generally, like nefarious is bad. We know that nefarious can't be good. We conspire. Conspire has, like, really not a bad meaning, but we've placed a negative connotation on the word. So I like to play with language with people. And it's like, well, how is the universe conspiring to bring me everything that I desire? Because it changes how I feel and think about that word, because we're hearing things. Like, if you had just said to someone, yeah, you showed up and you failed, but who cares? But that person goes, fail, 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 because their parents said, you're a failure. All that was negative. And so we're triggered by things. And that's when, like, when you see that change in someone, when you notice if someone is like, ooh, like you said something and it was like, oh, what word was that? What made them shift? That is my work as the coach, as the NLP practitioner, as your organizer, to watch for that, so that while we're clearing the space, I can help you clear that, because we'll go right back. I can clear a space and then you can fill it real easily.
Yeah.
Right. So
right.
If I don't dismantle the programming behind what got you there, then I'll see you again. And mostly I would like to not see you again unless it's for a different project.
Yeah. Different room. Room number two. And exactly. Now needing your space. So when you say soul and space organizer, even though I'm hearing that you do offer services separately, do you really find that if people work with you just to organize their entirety, that they end up with better results?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do. And because it really isn't just about, like I said, the clutter, you know, it's mm-hmm. like you didn't just get that way because you're innately messy. I mean, some people are, I guess, but it's a messy mind that leads to a messy space. And mm-hmm. so if I can give you tools, like a recent client, very successful in business, successful mama, great husband, relationship, all things good. She even came to me and was like, I don't know why I need you, but I need you. I connected with mm-hmm. you, but I'm like actually very happy where I am. And I was like, great. She's like, I'd like to just pay to talk to you. And I was like, let's do it. I mean, coaching looks different for each person. And mm-hmm. she started outlining things that like, well, you know, I had my day planned out and then I took this call and the call instead of 5 minutes was 20 and then it pushed everything back and my whole day was off and la 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 la. And it was a talk about boundaries. These are your boundaries that need to be set. Why do you feel you need to answer that phone? Or could you answer and expressly state at the beginning, hey, it's so great to hear from you. Unexpected. I am getting the boys ready and we are headed to the park. So is this a 30-second conversation or can we plan something for later where I could give you my full attention? But people right. feel bad. They're people pleasers and they want to be there for you. Right. No, you have to be there for yourself. You have nothing to give if you aren't there for yourself. So yes. it's that kind of turning the mirror around to be like, you get to do this and I can give you permission if that's what you need from somebody else so that you can start giving yourself permission to show up better.
Oh, that is such a huge one, right? Even when you said it, you know, even though I find with myself that I have a lot of awareness for things because I've studied a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So it's passed through my brain and I'm like, yeah, sure. I could tell you about string theory. You know, we're not going to talk about string theory right now. Or, you know, we've talked about flying, you know, and your husband's flying and I'm a pilot. So we could talk about flying, sure, you know, but do you embody it? You know, do you create those things for yourselves? And I think that when you talked about being a mirror, because that's where I feel with the self-study project that we need to look at our life like, but again, just like what you said within the organization is we're always projecting it outward. We're deflecting whatever is coming at us and we're not recognizing how much that comes from within. And I think that it comes down to a position of personal power. And that personal power aspect is where you're even going to desire boundaries before you obviously need boundaries, but you're not even yet speaking up for yourself in needing them. And I think that we encounter people who have boundaries, and especially if we don't have them ourselves, we get rubbed the wrong way by those people. But when you have the awareness of being like, if you can step back and not feel rejected, abandoned by that mm-hmm. person with mm-hmm. boundaries, you can then say for yourself, like, wow, I really respect the fact that they just said, you know, I could do this, but yeah. you know, if you want it this way, it's going to be different. And that's so powerful. And even in the self-study aspect, sometimes we come about how to self-study and how to self-reflect through an example mm-hmm. of someone else. When we say, definitely. Look at the way they do that. I want to do that. I'm going to find my way to that, mm-hmm. which, you know, unless you change, like you've said, some limiting beliefs and some programs about your potential and which is what you do.
Yeah.
They might need your help to get there, to recognizing they have personal power. They deserve personal power. Mm-hmm. And that with personal power, I mean, I'm trying to think right now, is there anything else you need at all? Like if you just find your personal power, don't you eat better because you're physically going to feel better. You move your body because you feel the power in it personally, as opposed to what you're going to look like,
right.
you know, when you get there or boundaries and, you know, gosh, it really comes down to personal power. That just hit me right now. So that's all.
I agree with you. And I would add to it personal power and self-respect, respect for self, because mm-hmm. we do those things when we when we think that we're worth it, right? So it's this underlying self-worth and self-respect. You don't say no to people for any other, well, I would say it's best to say no to things because it doesn't align with how you are taking care of yourself, how you respect yourself. And mm-hmm. if other people have issue or take issue with you setting boundaries, just like you said, that's mm-hmm. on them. Like this whole idea, I mean, I think there's so much in the world that's related to NLP and we don't really know it. It's not, like mm-hmm. I said, it's not something that's super taught, but you know, Don Miguel Ruiz and his four agreements, don't take it personally, but everyone, mm-hmm. They love to take things personally. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, she didn't come to my party. And so that must mean that she hates me. And it's like, no, yeah. it means she was tired. She had a really uh-huh. long week or something.
Yes.
So right. that has been huge for me. Doing this work is a continuation of like helping myself. The more I continue to get better, the more I continue to hear myself and get rid of my limiting beliefs and my faulty programming, the better I show up for my clients. And I think that's the only way to do this is to walk your talk, to do it first, because why would yeah. somebody place trust in me if I wasn't willing to take a hard look at my things? Now, right. I would say my problem is I can be judge and jury. You know, I'm like, I'm both sides. I'm the angel and the devil being yeah. like, well, you did this. And are you at cause for that? And how did you, and what, you know, uh-huh. like, so the internal dialogue, but it's a really, I wouldn't change it for anything to have come across this information. And then to find out, here's the best part. My father is an NLP guy. He learned with Bandler, who's one of the, you know, founders, the creators of NLP. Uh-huh. And I don't think he's a wonderful man. That's a whole nother topic. But just the fact that my whole life, when I finally learned and became a master practitioner, I understood my father, who all along had been asking me great questions, like, when did you decide that? Or, you know, well, what do you mean specifically by that? But when I was younger, I felt confronted by this, like, well, you are, you know, what, am I not good enough? Did I not think this out enough? So for me, it changed my relationship with my dad. And now I was like, oh my God, light bulb. He's been trying to help me. And I've been pushing against the help because it came, I put my own filters on things. You know, I mm-hmm. distorted his responses to mm-hmm. create, you know, evidence for my limiting beliefs, you know, that I wasn't good enough or, you know, whatever it was. And so now I'm like, oh my God. So now it's like, do you want to FaceTime? We can like nerd out on NLP, you know, like, so
you guys can talk code the whole time.
Exactly. And so it's really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's interesting. Do you actually find, well, two questions on that. Do you find that your awareness that you started out with an exposure to NLP and you pushed against it, does it help you when you work with people and you watch them push against the words that you say? So that question, but also why, if you were exposed to it for so long, do you think that your initial behavior was to push back as opposed to, you know, investigate or be curious? Because I always find that the greatest way to transmute something like that is curiosity. Because when someone gives you a mirror and they're basically telling you, you are this way, this way, and this way, if you become curious at it, then it doesn't hurt so much. But for you to have done it so young, I wonder, you know, I wondered if how much that helps you in your career with other people too.
For that specifically, why I pushed against it so hard was that I heard a lot of negative self-talk that another informative person in my life through my younger years would say, and I internalized that and I became the perfectionist. And there was a lot of the upheaval, you know, like I had a great childhood and also there was a lot that went on. I had a stepfather who was not a nice man and, and that's putting it mildly, but I had to, in my world, I had to become the adult and learn how to control situations to the best of my ability. And so when I would get excited about something and think I had a line on and I knew exactly what I wanted, and my dad would then ask me specifics about it. And now I know he was asking for understanding because he's a strategist. Mm-hmm. He would love to help me reach whatever potential I want, whatever outcome I want. But I took it as, because the questions are strong, they get you out of your own way. And I still had things in my way. I wanted things, but I wasn't going to be willing to pay the currency to get there, whatever that was. I wasn't going to be able to put myself forward in certain ways. So I didn't know what he did was labeled this thing NLP. I had no idea. I just was like, my dad is intense and he is a man with a lot of information. And he's like a dog with a bone. If you come to him with something, he's like, great, got it. He's got charts out. Yeah. He's got paper up on the wall. We're writing it out. And what does this look like? And he does all this and it's natural. And I took his excitement as that he was questioning, rather than trying to help me. It was just my spin on it. But I didn't have the tools as a young adult to express that. I was almost scared of my father because he was this bigger than life, amazing guy who does all these crazy things. And I just didn't understand it. So to know that now, that's why I pushed back. I pushed back because I had faulty programming. Go back. Your original question was,
how does it help you in your practice when you start to work with someone and you still see them pushing back to your powerful intenseness that has the answers and solutions?
So I am my father's daughter. And what I've had to realize is that we don't become who we are overnight. Meaning we didn't get to the point that the client needs me yesterday. So it's not going to take a little bit more than just a discovery call or just the initial call or the first hypnosis session on some things. Like if we're working on more than just one outcome, if there is underlying programming that needs to be taken care of, I have learned to contain my excitement, maybe not show it so much as to scare the other person, right? To keep, because when we all come up against the edge of our comfort zone, the easiest thing to do is stay inside the comfort zone. So I want to make it like a really nice, like, hey, look, it's really sunny over here and the water's fine. So you can come out. So I have learned to contain my excitement. I don't tell the client the full plan. This is for people like I'm going to work with for several months. I won't tell them everything we're going to do because they don't care. They just want the outcome. I'm not going to tell them like, oh, I'm going to do swish pattern with you and I'm going to do this. And then we're going to do some time techniques. And they're going to be like, I don't know what any of that is, but because I don't know it, I'm a little bit nervous and I don't want to do that. So instead I'm like, great. You tell me what you want. I'll figure out the plan to get there. And I'll feed it to you in bite-sized pieces.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my goodness. I get, of course, very excited about this because I am a little bit, no, let's just remove the words little bit. I am also intense. whether it's about astrology, I get very lit up when I'm like, I see that nature in you or, coming through or wondering about things, or whether it was when I was doing my training in homeopathy, it's just like, oh, let me tell you how it works. Though I do tend to still run on that. I tell people how things work as opposed to just creating the solution or the outcome. I still have to work on the fact that I give them all the steps. here's how homeopathy works. Here's when it started. And this is the guy who created it. And here's how you use it. Great. Yeah. You have everything you need.
Yeah, exactly.
In reality, they would have gone to school if they wanted to know all that. So they need you because you know all the tools to use at the right time.
Yeah. I think one of the other principles of NLP is that everybody has their own model of the world and is operating from that, and understanding people now at that level, like, well, why would someone do that? It's like, because that's how they're operating, And so to be able to see outside myself, because I think I have the best plan, right? I think I have the best way to do things. And so why don't you mm-hmm. just do it my way? And it's like, because they're mm-hmm. not you. So yeah. it's also understanding that people are not cookie cutters and, you know, they don't all come out the same from the factory. So each client for me is going to help me learn how to utilize a technique in a different way, right? Or mm-hmm. or what yeah. experience, what order of things is going to be best, because not everybody is stemming from the same deepest root cause belief or decision or experience. So I mm-hmm. think that's important to understand people's model of the world so that yeah. you aren't trying to like, I mean, I am a Taurus. And so what my husband said, I need the shirt. He saw it that said, I'm not bossy. I'm forcefully helpful. And I thought there's no better way to describe me.
That's great. You do need that shirt.
I do.
Please get the shirt.
Yes. So I need to get that. And it's so true because I want the best for my clients. I want uh-huh. your life to be everything you want it to be. I hold space yeah. for you. I celebrate you. I like to open my calls with my clients and, you know, as we're continuing on a more than like one-time session journey, what are you celebrating this week? Because going back to the beginning of our call, celebrating the small stuff, it's all the small stuff that adds up to big wins. It's the consistency. It's the, mm-hmm. you know, the actions we take every day will lead yeah. us towards or away from what we want. So mm-hmm. it's a lesson for me to learn to celebrate me, because if I'm focused on the celebrations, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. can't also be focused on I didn't do this or I didn't do that or I didn't complete this task right. or I didn't do this as well. No, I showed up and I did the thing and here's what I learned from it. And then it's like, great, mm-hmm. this is how I'm going to do better, even better the next time.
Right. Absolutely. And would you say that that could be a tool for my listeners that they can use, let's say, whether they are working with you or they're just starting to be exposed to this? Because you did make a very good point. There's actually a lot of people out there in the world who have some kind of training in whether it be nonviolent communication or neurolinguistic programming. I mean, one of the big ones is Tony Robbins. And quite mm-hmm. frankly, he's also kind of scary.
Yes.
You know, and if you actually listen or you take a workshop or you learn more about that in level of intensity and you jump on board, you hop in the water with him, mm-hmm. it's actually just amazing to go past over into your dad's level of intensity, for you to have crossed that bridge where you became ready for that. And now you have all the tools and level of intensity. But initially, yes. And so would you say for somebody who is either on their way to finding something like what you offer or in between times, or what they can do on their own is recognizing celebrating, because that is an excellent opportunity mm-hmm. for self-reflection. That is an amazing self-study Definitely. Project. Even, you know, I see a journal that you will create in your future, something about celebrating every day. You know, I think you should do that.
I have a journal in the works. So we'll see. Maybe you're right about mm-hmm. that, but it is in the works. And absolutely, one of the very first things that I think someone can do to start on this path is the celebrations, the daily celebrations. And the easiest thing is every time you hear yourself say, I don't want, you know, or mm-hmm. something, yeah, I don't want this or I don't want that. That yeah. you immediately ask yourself, what do I want then? And you actually answer the question. Because here's what I think a lot of people think self-study is like pondering, right? Like we mm-hmm. ponder questions, but people yeah. don't answer the question. Mm-hmm. I had someone come up to me after a talk and say, so if I'm feeling anxious feelings about like this job and blah, 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 and do I go back and review the file for the job? And I was meaning she's she does flower arrangements for weddings. And she's like, so if I'm feeling anxious, I'm like, well, what are you feeling anxious about? And she's like, well, what if the flowers don't show up? And I said, she went off into a litany of like, what if the flowers don't show up? What if the bride hates this stuff? What if this happens? And I said, do you ever answer those questions? And she goes, uh-huh. oh, no. And I said, great. So what happens if the flowers don't show up? And well, I've always have backup flowers on hand. And I said, wonderful. I said, so what happens if the bride doesn't like them? Well, I have a contract in place that makes it secure so that, you know, da, da, da. Okay. So she had an answer to every question, which I could see her physically start to breathe easier. Like instead of the breathing here, she's moving down. And like, oh, and I said, great. Now, if we are willing to be delusional about what could go wrong, why don't we get delusional about what could go right? So every time you start to ask yourself a negative, what if, you start to flip it to the positive. So what if that bride was so thrilled with your flowers that she gave you $1,000 tip? What if not only did the flowers show up, but an extra batch of flowers showed up and you were able to provide those for another event gratis, you know, like all these things, like if you are willing to be delusionally negative, be delusionally positive.
Another powerful example of words that often have meaning like manipulation and delusional and yet they can be used in powerful favor.
Absolutely. Like I don't, you know, I want to be delusional about how grand life could be. Here's, you know, something else that your listeners all the time, we get asked, how are you? And a lot of our responses, good. Well, first of all, who in the heck wants to be good? I want to be great, grand, and glorious. I want to be fantastical. I want to be extraordinary. I don't want to just be good. So we've gotten used to that. So I think part of it is just a getting consciously aware of like when someone asks you the question, how are you? Why don't you actually go inside for a couple of seconds and think, how am I? Because we don't ask ourselves that. We don't think, well, some people do, but a lot of times we're running on autopilot and we don't go, how am I? I was in a yoga class once and the teacher said, you know, place a hand on your heart and ask yourself, like, or say, she said, welcome home. And that to me, first of all, was like, just yes, welcome home. This is the only home you keep for your entire life. So welcome home. How are you feeling? What do you need? And those two questions for me are like, as soon as I feel myself start to get worked up about something, pump the brakes, how am I feeling? What do I need? And I sit with that for 30 seconds. And it's like, I immediately have an answer, you know, but if I hadn't asked myself the question, I would, could have spiraled into chaos. And just the whole day is now framed by this overwhelm and emotion. And it's like, no, no, just how are you feeling? What do you need? Call it out, answer the question, and then go forth with that understanding.
Yes. And I think for us to actually ask ourselves questions means that we have to be still, we have to be quiet. The way to spirit is to listen. So, you know, it so often I think we're not even asking ourselves questions about, did I like what just happened? Wait, I reacted a certain way. Why did I even react? And that is, that's just even step one before you even start to self-study really, you know, is to actually say, ask questions, because we are so good at going outside ourselves and inquiring with everyone else. But I love that example of what if you just answered those questions. That's pretty powerful. Very powerful. Oh my goodness. Well, I do see a future episode with you with regards to this financial conversation, because I think that that is, you know, part of, you know, my business is the Wisdom Within Wellness Collective. But wellness is not just your physical wellness. Wellness is your financial wellness, your relational wellness, and all of this. That's what helps you embody wellness. And finances do often create scarcity mentality, foundational problems, foundational root chakra, you know, lower body problems, which leads to weight gain, which leads to cholesterol. I mean, like the interconnectedness of it all. And who knew that it came down to your very survival and then your thriving, you know? So I would love to have you on again. I mean, this is very powerful stuff. Well, how do people find you? And, you know, what is, do you have a website? And I hear you have a journal coming soon. That'll be great. But where can people find you?
So I have the website, thesoulandspaceorganizer.com. So thesoulandspaceorganizer.com. But more and more I felt, even though I understand that as what I do, what my business is me. So in the very near future, it is going to be AdriannaMacGregor.com. I think this is all part of my next evolution and my continued self-study, because somebody once told me, like, well, make it easy for people to spell. And my name has two N's in it. In Adrianna, it's a Mac instead of a Mick. And so I didn't choose my name as my business. So yes, so people will currently find me at the soulandspaceorganizer.com, very soon to be AdriannaMacGregor.com.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes as well so that you can find her. Well, lastly, I would like to ask you on a very personal note, what do you specifically find, maybe right now, maybe it's a favorite tool that you use to self-study, whether it be, you know, at the end of the day, or, you know, this one thing that you can, you know, share with others that you have found to be your favorite right now, your favorite method of self-reflection and study?
My favorite method. So you mentioned being still, but I actually find that I do my best listening in when I'm meditating. So when I'm out on a walk, and I was for a time listening to podcasts and whatever, but I work, you know, on computers a lot, and I've got AirPods in for calls and things that I'm doing. And so there's a lot of outer noise. So I have recently taken on, my walks are sans devices. They don't, I don't have my phone. I don't have listening to anything. I'm listening to myself. I'm focused on my breathing, and I'm undoing things in my mind as I walk. And that's how I do it best. So I like that, but gentle movement, you know, something it's like walking is just, it's now I know how to walk, so I don't have to think about it. So there's not a lot of thinking there. So that is for me. I mean, it sounds so simple, but the way to self-study is not difficult. It's not strife. It's not, you know, oh, you have to learn and then do. No, you just, what sounds good to you? How can you listen to yourself? So for me, it's meditating.
I love it. And I love these big words, or at least they're big for me. I've never heard the word meditating, and it makes perfect sense. There was a yesterday, Jenna and I had a podcast together, and there was a word that I had created, and I repeat it again. And at the moment when I'd like to recall it, it's gone because it doesn't actually exist. When I hear my podcast again. Yeah, it was great. But I love when people use words that I don't use often, because, you know, we can usually trace what they mean from their roots, but it's like, oh, that's a good word. That's a really good word.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being here. I would love to have you again. This has been very reflective, and I love having you on. Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. And anytime you let me know, and we'll plan another one.
Awesome. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Self-Study Project, a podcast to deepen your practice through reflection, with co-hosts Jenna Baird and Stephanie Gibson. Subjects cover holistic health, nutrition, yoga, philosophy, spirituality, astrology, parenting, relationships, conscious living, sustainable practices, and so much more. At no time does this podcast offer medical advice and is for educational purposes only. It remains your decision to pursue any information, and do not hold your hosts or their guests liable. More information available at theselfstudyproject.com.